Welcome in to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Ermeliotis here, back on a Monday night with Blackhawks Live. And always, Jack Heinrich is riding shotgun with me. Jack, the streak is over for the Blackhawks. It was a tough day for Chicago sports yesterday.
Yeah.
Bears,
it all came
the Hawks.
Crashing down.
Yeah, what other? There was one other team that lost over the weekend.
Northwestern was on their streak too.
Yeah, they lost too.
Yeah.
All right. See, that's why Chicago sports teams, it feels like they win together, they lose together.
Like we said on Saturday,
we ride the emotional waves together here in Chicago. And the Blackhawks, they suffered a 3-1 loss to the LA Kings after riding high from a 4-0-1 stretch in their last five games. Played themselves into the first wild card spot in the Western Conference, and it's gotten us a little bit excited. So we'll break all that down. Power play stuff. Ryan Donato is off to a sensational season, picking up where he left off last year. And then, of course, the Blackhawks made a trade on Friday afternoon, shipping Lucas Reichel to the Vancouver Canucks. We'll dissect that trade in the second half of this show, in the second segment, in detail. So stay tuned for that. But let's start off with the loss yesterday. Not necessarily breaking down the loss as a whole, but just talking about the one key element I thought, Jack, in that loss to LA yesterday was the power play going 0-for-5. And you knew that was going to be a point of emphasis at practice today, and it sure was. The Hawks made a couple power play tweaks at practice today. They moved Andre Burakovsky up to the first power play unit. They dropped Teuvo Teravainen to the second unit, but they also moved Connor Bedard from the left faceoff circle to the right faceoff circle, which is an area I like him much better on the right side than the left side, because the left circle feels more of a teeing up a one-timer, and for Connor, his strength is that toe drag release, and I just feel like he can do that better on the right side than he can the left side, because when he's on the left side, you're essentially feeding. We saw it when Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat were here. It was Kane feeding DeBrincat, and DeBrincat has that lethal slap shot, and that's how he would score most of his goals. But with Bedard, it's the wrist shot. It's the how he changes the angle. And he spent most of his time in Regina in the WHL playing on the right side, so I think it's going to benefit him. But, Jack, no surprise that the Blackhawks at practice today spent a majority of the time focusing on the power play, because they went 0-for-5 last night and they didn't generate much. It felt like that was the area that they could have elevated. It would have been the difference in the game if they would have converted on at least one of those chances, but unfortunately they didn't.
Yeah, see, that was a big emphasis in the post-game locker room, too. They were kind of asking Jason Dickinson about it, even though he's not on the power play. It's just like, well, yeah, like, you know, that can change momentum. And Connor Bedard kind of said the same thing.
Connor was blunt.
Yeah,
he said our power play was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, all right, yeah, honesty, I like it.
He was being really honest, and then he's just like, the Kings play boring, and that's not a dig. Yeah. He was all
He's not wrong, by the way.
Yeah.
He's not. Patrick, not to interrupt you, Patrick Kane said he had similar comments a few years ago. That Peter Laviolette, I think it was Peter Laviolette's team that ran, he for sure ran a 1-3-1 neutral zone, and it's such a boring style because you, for the skilled players, you just can't break that neutral zone. And so it reminded me when Connor said that, I'm like, oh man, Kane used to have those comments too. It's just like such a boring style of hockey. So I get it.
Yeah. And then they asked Blashill after the game, and he said he wanted to look at it, but he said the big thing was not winning the faceoff, and then they're just chasing the puck, and they did that a lot yesterday. It seemed like they were trying to get in their zone, and when you dump the puck against the Kings, it's hard to go to work, basically, because they're so good at shutting it down. And I mean, they looked great in that first period, and then it just kind of tailed off after that, and they gave up those two goals, and they went in the shutdown mode, and they couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, which is interesting, by the way. You mentioned the faceoffs that Blashill had mentioned. I think the Hawks won like 55% of their draws in the game.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if he's singling out. I'd have to go back and look, but maybe the power play specifically, they didn't have a positive winning percentage in the faceoff department. So I'm sure that played a role when Blashill was looking at what exactly went wrong in that game. I also think the lack of Tyler Bertuzzi hurt in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He missed the game because of an injury. he's their net front guy, and he's really good in that role. And the LA Kings have big physical defensemen that make it hard to play against in front of the net. And so Bertuzzi is a guy that feels like he maybe could have made a difference in that area because he's greasy. Like, feels like if the Hawks were to score a power play goal, it was going to be a dirty one, you know, like off the shin pad, or it was going to be a deflection or whatever. And they didn't have Tyler Bertuzzi in that game. So I'm sure that played a role. I also don't mind the Hawks trying Burakovsky on the first unit and dropping Teravainen on the second. Let me start with Teravainen. Teravainen was on the right side. I really like Teravainen as a player, but through the first eight games of the season, Teravainen only had 6 shots on goal. 6 total.
Wow.
So he wasn't even averaging a shot on goal per game. Last night against LA, he recorded 5 shots on goal. So he almost got 6 in one game, and he didn't even get 6 in the first 8 games. And when I see that, I think, okay, when they're on the power play, Teravainen, I think he defers to Connor Bedard too much. And if he's not going to shoot the puck on that right side, then it's not going to keep the penalty killers honest.
Yeah.
And so I think the Hawks are looking at this like, let's drop him to the second unit. But I also think it's not a knock on Teravainen. I think it was more of an elevation of Burakovsky with how he plays with Connor Bedard. And it feels like this year, the second unit has been much better than the first unit as far as the power play, at least just generating chances. And Burakovsky is a big part of that second unit as far as the entries go. And that's one area that the first unit has really struggled, is just carrying the puck into the zone cleanly and getting set up. There have been several times in the early part of this season where the Hawks have had a hard time just getting into the zone. And so now with Bedard and Burakovsky as the 1-2 punch in the zone entry department, I wonder if that's going to play as big of a role as, just as important as Connor Bedard moving from the left side to the right side, because I'm confident Connor's going to shoot more on the right side now.
And Burakovsky's been, I mean, the second power play has been a little bit better at times than the first, and it's been because of him. So I think that makes sense to move him up. And then him and Bedard have played so much, they're starting to build that chemistry. I mean, they've connected on a few goals, and I mean, anything at this point to try to spark it, right? I mean,
right.
It's just been struggling. And I mean, they've played well overall in other aspects. So just trying to get something like this to get going would really help. I think last year at some point too, they're pretty good with the power play and the penalty kill, but everything else was kind of a mess. And now
right.
This year it's a little bit of the inverse, but we'll see how that works tomorrow when they roll that out, and hopefully they can start converting on it and then they get rolling with it.
All right, let's get to Ryan Donato, picking up where he left off last year. Career season last year, 31 goals, 62 points, a 15 goal improvement from his previous career high of 16. And he doubled his point total from his previous career high, going from 31 to 62. This year, if you look at his first 3 games, he had 0 points. And I'm like, oh man, I wasn't expecting a regression this early. But hold the phone, because Ryan Donato then rips off a goal in 4 straight games and a 5-game point streak. And he is on pace now for 46 goals and 64 points this season. Not a bad percentage. I think even prior to yesterday's game, he was on pace for 52. Now, Jack, I probably would take the under on 52 goals,
yeah.
But it was encouraging that it's like, all right, Donato's back. Last year wasn't an aberration. He is more like the player that he was last year than he was in the years prior, in my opinion. And it's nice to see Donato producing and picking up where he left off. And last year, Jack, we did a show. I just looked up the date.
Yeah.
October 29th, we did a Blackhawks live show last year. And this was our Hawks click, our poll question for that show. How many goals? Well, actually, wait, let me get through the full question. Through their first 10 games, Ryan Donato currently leads the Blackhawks with 5 goals. His career high is 16. How many goals will he finish with? And these were our 4 options: 12 or fewer, 13 to 18, 19 to 24, 25 or more. And last year, Jack, I think I'm almost positive I predicted I was in the 19 to 24 range. So I was dead wrong by, I don't even know what I predicted. I might have even said like 23. So I was off by 8 goals. You were saying you think you were 12 or fewer, but that does not sound right. I think you were in the 13 to 18 range.
I was lower than you, yeah.
But still, so we ran the same poll question today. So literally almost a year to the date, how many goals will Ryan Donato finish with this season? And he leads the Blackhawks with 5 goals through 9 games. We are almost in the same exact position as last year. However, I will say Donato, if I'm not mistaken, was a healthy scratch twice last year.
He was, yeah.
In like the first couple games of the season. So last year was like, oh, didn't see this coming. Now it's like, oh, this year it's like Donato led the league or led the Blackhawks in goals last year. No surprise that he's already doing it again. So this is our poll question. This is our answers now. The first one is 19 or fewer. So last year we had 12 or fewer. We bumped it up by 7. It was the baseline. So now we're expecting 19 or fewer, 20 to 25, 26 to 30, 31 to 35, or 36 or more. So at the risk of looking like an idiot for a second straight year, Jack, I think we should shoot higher than we did last year. So I'm going to say, I don't want to sell him short. So he had 31 last year. I still think 31 would be, oh man, it would be so high. Jack, I'm going to say in between 26 and 30, and I'm going to say he gets right at 30. So I'm going to say the high end of 26 to 30, knocking on the door of the 31 to 35, but I'm going to say he finishes with 30. How about you?
I say same range, but I'm going probably 28 right in the middle. I think that would be pretty good. He just turned it on the last 5 games, and I agree with you. It seems like this is more of the player who he's going to be going forward. This is his third season in Chicago. He's comfortable. He's got the contract. I think he likes where he is, and it seems like a place where he's thriving. So I still think 28 would be pretty good, but
yes.
I think 98, 91 might be ahead of him if the way they're going.
So we're strategically doing this by not overselling. We're not going more than 31 because last year we doubted Donato and he proved us wrong. So this year we're going to go under the 31. Hopefully he will prove us wrong again.
Yes.
You know, cause we don't want to jinx it this time. But even you mentioned it, even if he gets 28, let's just say following up a 31 goal season with a 28 goal season when your previous career high was 16, that's
great.
That would be a successful second year, like a second year of coming off the year of the career year with 31 goals and 62 points. So I'm right there with you. It sounds like Hawks fans agree. 57% that voted on this poll are in the 26 to 30 range as well. We had 29% in between 31 to 35. And so I think the majority of the Hawks fan base, it looks like 14% are 20 or 25, and nobody predicted 19 or fewer. So they're more so on the higher end of the 26 goals than they are under, which is encouraging. And I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at what he's been able to do. I mean, he can just turn it on like that. And he didn't factor in yesterday in the scoring, but he was a big reason why they started winning those games during that streak. So, yeah, I mean, he's played very well with Connor Bedard. He's been playing all over the lineup. I mean, I think he's what, on the third line or something right now.
Yeah, so now he's on the second, but he was on the third.
They're moving him around, so. That versatility helps too. And I mean, you know, he's a hard worker. He gets along great with Connor Bedard. They talked about it at the end of the year, and it looks like he's validating that extension, which I think players want to do when they get that contract, is you want to live up to it. And I think he's off to a good start.
Really good point that you just reminded me of. I like him a lot on the third line. When the third line is Donato, Dickinson, Mikheyev.
Yeah, it's a great
line. Oh, that's a really good checking line. And the reason I like it is because Donato plays important and effective minutes. I think his sweet spot in the minutes department is between 15, 16, 17, maybe 18, like pushing the high end. Last year, towards the end of last year, he was playing on the top line with Bedard, and he was pushing 20, 21 minutes a night. I think that's just a tad too high, mainly because he's not the fleetest of foot. He plays really hard. Mm-hmm. And so it can be wearing mentally and physically if he plays 21 minutes, 22 minutes a night. So I really like the sweet spot that they found. Last night against LA, he played 20 minutes and 16 seconds of ice time. I think that's a couple minutes too high. So once the problem is the Hawks are not healthy right now. So
a little banged up.
Yeah. So Bertuzzi's out. Mikheyev, this is where we'll go now really quick before we take a break. But Mikheyev got banged up in the third period last night. He did not return. Wasn't at practice today. Sounds like day to day, which is actually encouraging, Jack, because when I saw him go in and he was holding his right shoulder, he got tripped into the boards. If he didn't see the play, went immediately to the locker room holding his right shoulder. And I thought maybe it might be a collarbone. And I'm like, oh man, I hope that's not a collarbone issue because that would be more of a longer term injury. But the fact that it's day to day is encouraging. And so with Bertuzzi out, with Mikheyev out, Dickinson was banged up for a few games and he redrew into the lineup yesterday against LA. I asked Jeff Blashill this today. Do you consider going back to 12 forwards and six defensemen? You know, just because you don't want to overly strain your forwards, especially with two of your top nine guys out. And he said, man, I really like the 11 and seven. It works for our decor. And by the way, I was not asking Jeff this question to say, you sure you shouldn't go to 12 and 7? I was actually just saying, hey, at what point does it become a conversation? I actually love the 11 and 7. It does work
for
this group.
Yeah.
And now that they traded Lucas Reichel, they're not scratching three forwards a game. It's only two. And so when it's three, it's not reasonable for anyone, right? And so I really like the 11 and 7. It doesn't sound like Blashill is motivated to go to the 12 and 6, back to just 12 and 6. Even though he's dealing with some injuries. And so it's just going to be more minutes for Bedard, for Nazar, for some of the top guys. And it's a good thing because you want Bedard to play 20 plus minutes a night, but you don't want it to play 25 minutes a night where then it's like he hits a wall in December.
Yeah, I think him and Nazar played a lot in the third period yesterday too.
Yeah, they played. Yes. I think Bedard was almost at 10 minutes in the third period yesterday, which is a lot. And when you're trailing, that's normal, because you want your stars out there to help push. But, yeah, it doesn't sound like the Blackhawks are going to go to, 11 and 7. All right. Coming up next, Jack and I are going to break down the Lucas Reichel trade. We'll share all of our thoughts as well as the return that the Blackhawks got on it. That's coming up next on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich with you. And the Blackhawks made a trade on Friday afternoon. It's a kind of a late afternoon, sending Lucas Reichel to the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for a 2027 fourth round pick. It's one of the storylines that we were following pretty much all of training camp. And even Kyle Davidson had said, on day one of training camp, when asked about Reichel specifically, saying it was a prove it training camp for Lucas. And he knew that it was going to be, Reichel probably knew that it was going to be an uphill battle to try to muscle his way into the top nine of Chicago because of the chances that he had gotten over the last couple of years. And it felt like it was trending in this direction that both sides were going to move on and get a fresh start. But, so the Hawks end up sending Reichel to Vancouver. And Jack, before we get into the weeds of the trade, did you see yesterday the Vancouver story on where Reichel was when he found out about the trade?
Yeah, Portillo's.
He's in the Portillo's parking lot. Well, it's funny because I read the story, and so Friday night was the Blackhawks Halloween party, which, side note, Hawks crushed it. Bedard, Nazar.
Content.
Oh, it was incredible. Bedard, Nazar, Thing 7. Nick Foligno dressing up as Nick Sirianni, the Philadelphia Eagles guy. They are doppelgangers. I mean, it is crazy how much they look alike. Anyway, total side note. But that was on Friday night. And so Reichel, I guess, went shopping with Table Teravainen for a costume for last minute because they didn't know what they were going to wear. And while they were shopping, they caught wind that there was a trade that was about to go down, and Reichel officially got the call when he was in the Portillo's parking lot. So, hey, Lucas, that's so relatable. I actually think I might have been at that same Portillo's on Saturday, the day before. That was actually funny. When I was here.
Yeah,
we were doing the sports show. Yeah. I ended up getting lunch after because then I went to practice, and I went to the Portillo's here in River North. So I think that might have been the one. I know it's only a drive through, but that's probably the
might
one.
Might have been
at.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Lucas, I get it, man. Portillo's, it's hard to stay away from. Anyways, I digress. with Reichel, let's get into the reasoning on both sides. So after the trade happened, TSN's Pierre LeBrun had put out on social media that Reichel had asked for a trade. I'm not sure exactly it was Reichel initiating the process. I think it was the Blackhawks preparing to move on from him on some level, and Reichel reciprocating as far as, I would welcome a fresh start as well. So I think both sides were trying to make it happen, regardless. A lot of the social media talk was only a fourth round pick for the Hawks, and it was in 2027. And I got to be honest with you, I think that's indicative of what the market was for Lucas. And I think if the Hawks were, if the Hawks got a fourth round pick, that means that was the best offer somebody offered. And so that's just what, you know, it's, that's what the market was bearing. And so unfortunately for the Blackhawks, they weren't able to get a respectable return. But at that point, the Hawks were just like, we just need to cut our losses and make sure that we're not there. First of all, credit to the Hawks for doing right by the player. They could have easily dragged this out, you know, throughout the season and waited out for the best possible return, whichever that return could have been. I don't know. Could the Hawks have gotten a third? I mean, at that point, I mean, what are we doing? So the Hawks decided, hey, we're going to move him. We're going to open up the roster spot because down the road, there are going to be players like Oliver Moore and Nick Lardis that are going to maybe graduate to the NHL or at least want to get NHL looks. And if Reichel is there blocking a potential path, then, you know, I'm not sure that would be wise. And so I'll say this with Reichel, he kind of had some unfair expectations placed on him after getting drafted by the Blackhawks with the 17th overall pick in 2020. Now, let me explain. I've got to contextualize this. And so it's, forgive me if this is a little long-winded, but if you can remember the 2020 season for the Blackhawks, they were coming off that COVID year. They had made the playoffs in since the 2017 season when they got swept by Nashville. The only reason the Hawks ended up getting into the playoffs the COVID year is because they expanded the bubble to 24 teams and the Hawks got in, right? So if you eliminate that, the Hawks were not a playoff team. Well, Reichel gets drafted in 2020 and the cupboard is so bare for the Blackhawks as far as the pipeline goes. And when Reichel gets drafted, all eyes were on Lucas to try to be that young talent that could help energize the group when he graduates to the NHL. Because at the time, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook was still on the roster. And so the Hawks were trying to push forward to make one more run. And the year of 2020 draft, I think that was the year the Hawks went out and acquired Seth Jones, or it might have been the year afterwards. So the Hawks were trying to take advantage of the final of the back half of the careers of Kane and Toews. And to do that, when you're up against the salary cap, you need cheap young talent and impactful talent. And so all eyes were on Reichel. And I just remember watching, what is he doing in Germany? What's going to happen when he graduates or when his season in Germany ends? Is he going to be into the NHL right away? How much time might he need in the minors? And so there were just all these eyes and all this pressure on Reichel to just be a guy that will be an impact on the roster. And you think about it today, the Hawks are in a rebuild and they've amassed so much talent, specifically with first round picks, that it's almost like, here's how I would contextualize it today. The Blackhawks in this past year's draft class, they drafted Vaclav Nestrosil with the number 25 overall pick. Imagine if we were closely monitoring Nestrosil this year. What is he doing? How is he performing in college? When is he going to make it to the NHL? But he's kind of like an afterthought because you're like, what's Anton Frundell doing? What's Oliver Moore doing? What Frank Nazar is growing in front of our very eyes? Lefshinov and Renzel are
Nick Lardis.
I mean Mason West. Like, mm-hmm. You're excited about him. It's like if you got drafted by the Blackhawks today, it doesn't hold as much weight because their pipeline is so strong. They have all these first round picks, and there's no pressure on. We're investing so much in the number 25 overall pick, Vaclav Nestrosil, for him to hit and be a player. Reichel, those were the expectations for him, unfair or not. I think it was unfair to him because it almost feel like he couldn't really develop at his own pace. And so there was just a lot going on. And so I'm excited for him to go to Vancouver, play in a low pressure situation when it comes to expectations, because they're not expecting much from, not that they're not expecting much from him, but when you only give up a fourth round pick,
yeah,
you haven't invested a lot in Reichel. It's kind of like, oh yeah, he's a player with young talent. He's got a lot of skill. Let's take a flyer on him. And if he hits, he hits. And so Vancouver is our market that cares about their hockey team. Like they want to win. So it's not a quiet environment. It's not like, you know, going to whatever, like a lower market teams that's quiet. You can get away from the rink and not hear the outside noise. You know, it's a loud market in some ways, but expectations wise, I don't think Vancouver is placing so much and investing so much in Reichel's success there, where Reichel can just kind of breathe easy, play his game. And I would not be surprised, Jack, if he ends up flourishing there or ends up becoming a player that flourishes, even if it's not in Vancouver, somewhere else, because he doesn't have all the attention and the expectations of being a first-round pick.
Exactly, yeah. It seemed like both sides needed a fresh start. It seemed like this was coming in the last few years and maybe got drawn out a little bit or whatnot. But, I mean, he was getting scratched the last few years. He was in and out of the lineup. He would go to Rockford. So it seemed like they tried everything and it didn't work out. And he was still a great guy in the room and everybody liked him a lot. You could tell it wasn't like this was like a problem, like hanging over their head. Which was nice. And yeah, I know a lot of people on social media were just like, whoa, like it actually happened. To me, it just seemed like, oh, like they finally found like a trading partner. And I mean, yeah, not every draft pick is going to hit for your team. That doesn't mean he won't be good in Vancouver or wherever else, but it seemed like it was heading towards this. And I mean, they just get another draft pick to add to their assets. And maybe people, it is hard when you trade a former top 20 pick, and then you get a fourth rounder, you're kind of like, oh, you know. But when you're really close to the situation, sometimes it's hard to be like, well, this is kind of what his value is now.
Right.
And that's what you have to look at it as. And, I mean, he gets to go play with Vancouver, and I think he was on the second line in his first game, and he had a crazy traveling story trying to get there, and he had trouble with the plane and whatnot. And but he got there, and now he's played there a few games, and I think you said they're gonna see him next week.
Yep. November 5th. So whatever that is, I think that's next
Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yeah. So nine days.
Yeah, 9 days. Yeah. It's not him coming back here, but it's still playing against him. And I mean, it's just something that happened. And at least, like you're saying now, the pipeline's loaded, so clearing roster space and for some of the next guys, and they're finally able to figure out a way to move on. And Lucas seemed like he wanted it too, so it seems like a win-win for both sides right now.
Yeah, here's another where I will lean on kind of sympathizing with Reichel. Is I wasn't crazy about how the Blackhawks handled his development. I feel like he got yo-yoed up and down too much.
All over the place.
Yeah, he went NHL, then AHL, then NHL, then AHL. I mean, he went up and down, I felt like, too many times. And even when he came over to North America, they wanted to develop him as a center, but I think he's more of a natural winger. And I know he's playing center in Vancouver. He was centering the second line in Vancouver in his first two games. By the way, you mentioned, yesterday they played Edmonton. Reichel went up against Leon Draisaitl's line, and Reichel won 8 of his 13 draws. So credit
there
to
you go.
That Reichel. Yeah. I mean, I know he didn't pick up any points in either of the first two games, but he performed well in the faceoff circle in the second game. First game, I think he lost, I think he took 10 faceoffs, lost 8 of them. So anyway, my point is, I think he's a guy that's better suited on the wing, and they were developing him to try to be more of a two-way center down in Rockford. And I'm just not sure that was his game. I think they probably should have leaned in more to let him flourish offensively and be more of a, on a much lesser scale, be more of a Patrick Kane, like, you know, not try to coach him up to be this, you know, Marian Hossa two-way player, but coach him up to just be, hey, like, just lean on your strengths, be a guy that creates offense. And I think in spending more time trying to be responsible in his own end and being a center, it maybe took away from his offensive creativity. And then he kind of hit, okay, am I an offensive playmaker, or am I going to be a two-way center? I'm not sure. I digress. We'll see what he ends up being in Vancouver, but I think he's more of an offensively talented player that needs to play in a top six role, is going to play power play, or like should play power play time. That's where he gets his, you know, he makes his bread and butter. And a couple weeks ago when the Hawks were in St. Louis, that was one of the best games I've seen Reichel play in such a long time. And I think that's what makes it hard to part ways with a guy like that is it's like, man, if you could just extract that and if he could be that player over a consistent period of time, that's exactly what the Hawks were hoping for. But when you have 3 points, and it just feels like he was quiet in the next couple games. And it's like, that's what you can't have if you're the Blackhawks and you're trying to build your next great team. You can't have the inconsistencies. And so it was a low risk, medium to high reward kind of trade for Vancouver and for the Blackhawks. Also, last note, I should remind people that Reichel was drafted by the old regime. So it's not like the Hawks new regime, like Kyle Davidson, it's not like they invested a lot in the success of Reichel. Like they have so many guys that they've been developing. And so I think Reichel probably was welcoming a fresh start where he can go to a team that he knows they believed in him, or they believed in him enough to go just give up a future asset for him. And so I'm really excited to see what Reichel can do over in Vancouver. All right, we got one more break to get to, and then we're going to wrap up the Blackhawks. Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois Sports Betting, the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois Sports Betting, the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here and Jack Heinrich putting a bow on this show of Blackhawks Live. That clip you just heard was Pat Boyle and I doing a podcast earlier today on the CHSN Blackhawks Breakaway podcast, sponsored by Chicago Sports Network, your home stream advantage. We were talking about the one-on-one interview that Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet did with Jonathan Toews over in Canada that aired on Saturday night. And Toews was talking about how he had such massive responsibilities being named the captain of Chicago Blackhawks at age 20 years old, the third youngest captain in NHL history at the time, and just how seriously he took that role and how much of a, not a burden it was, but it was a large responsibility, and he took that role very seriously, and it was maybe part of the reason why it was hard on him towards the end of his Blackhawks career, is because he really wore it. And so Toews seems to be in a much better spot. The Hawks are going to see Toews in Winnipeg on Thursday night for the first time, so that should be a really interesting matchup. Last thing before we wrap up, Jack. Did you see the viral clip that was going around on Thursday night, Tampa Bay, where the Hawks tried sending Connor Bedard out on the ice on the 5-on-3, and he was just dripping blood everywhere, and even the broadcasters on ESPN and were like, what are the Hawks trying to do sending him out there? So I tried to get clarification on what exactly Jeff Blashill was arguing there, because it seemed clear to us, like, well, he's dripping blood. Why are the Hawks trying to get away with sending Connor out there? So I guess the officials were telling Blashill that on a double minor penalty, if you were the one that was injured in that double minor, that counts as an injury. And so you have to leave the ice until the next whistle. I guess that's in the rule book. And I think Blashill was kind of arguing, I don't think that's accurate. And he was like, I've never heard that. Like, it's just blood. It's not like an actual injury, like a guy was down on the ground or whatever. And so while that was happening, you can see Bedard getting treatment by the head trainer. Bedard was trying to get patched up so he can go out there for the 5-on-3. What I'm not confident, I don't know if Blashill knew that Bedard was still dripping blood. And so when he got put back out there, I think optically it looked like, why are the Hawks trying to get away with Bedard hitting the ice while he's still dripping blood? So that certainly played a role, but the officials were telling Blashill that he has to sit out until the next stoppage, because technically he is an injured player because of the blood. So anyway, I just thought it was funny because it got so much play on social media, the Hawks trying to like sneak it in, and Blashill looked very passionately. And I was like, what exactly is he arguing? Happy. I was like, it looked pretty obvious to us that Connor shouldn't have been out there, but I guess that was the discussion was between the two. But I thought it was really funny. Obviously the Blackhawks really wanted Bedard to get out there, and I can't remember it. I don't think there was a quick whistle afterwards.
There wasn't.
Yeah, and so unfortunately he wasn't really able to get out there. But yeah, Bedard is all stitched up. I love what he said after the game though. He's like, I never felt better, you know, because
they won.
Yep, because you get a W, and you kind of forget about how much pain you're in, because you would gladly pay the price if it means getting a W, and it did for Chicago. So anyway, just thought that was funny. All right, that's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Our next show is going to be on Tuesday, November 4th at 7 p.m.